For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of the Detroit Football Network podcast. I'm Justin Rogers, Will Birchfield. I'm in Green Bay. Will is at the end of a very long day, probably longer than mine, celebrating a one-year-old birthday. But Will, you got a chance to watch the game.
And, I did, yes. Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. Like, this team continues to do what it needs to do despite all the adversity, all the circumstance, and honestly, they're kind of making it look easy.
Yeah, they continue to raise the bar for themselves. I mean, that was a good Packers team that looked pretty pedestrian today against the Lions. And last week, that was, at least statistically, the number one defense in the NFL that allowed 52 points to the Lions. And the week before, on the road in Minnesota against the undefeated Vikings, they score 31 points and win that game, and led by two touchdowns for most of that game after a slow start. The week before that, the Cowboys aren't a bad team, and the Lions made them look horrible. That week to week to week, besides maybe a quarter against the Vikings, they're doing things to teams that no one else is doing to those teams, and they are making it look easy. And it isn't, which is why it's so remarkable the way they're rolling right now.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting a little repetitive here, but this looks like the best team in football. And all due respect to Kansas City, you know, they are very much getting the job done as well. But I don't know if I've made this comment in this space. I've certainly expressed it to some colleagues, but it's starting to remind me of the Patriots during kind of their glory era. And in the sense that, you know, there would be weeks where they would blow out a bad team. There would be the weeks where they'd have the Tennessee game or the Dallas game. But a lot of those weeks where it was just like 30-20 and it was businesslike. It never felt like they were out of control. They dictated the tempo. They dictated the pace. And that's what I feel like when I'm watching these Lions teams, is they're just in control. And this game in particular was impressive because there's always going to be this stigma attached to dome teams, right? That they can't handle the elements. And I get it. Dan Campbell came in here and you got the, in a landfill, one ass cheek, you know, broken syringes, we're going to beat you. Like, I know that's the mentality he's trying to instill, but saying it and doing it are different things. And what blew my mind today a little bit was the Lions look like the team that was the outdoor team. They executed. Yeah. They did so comfortably. Goff throwing, you know, he's wearing double gloves, which I don't know how difficult that is, but, you know, he's throwing downfield passes immediately. And the Packers were the ones that were just tripping all over themselves with drop passes, drop snaps. And look, you're not responsible for your opponent making mistakes. You just have to capitalize on it. But just the consistency from the opening kickoff to the end of the game was really, really impressive. And I think just adds to, I guess, the aura of what this team is about this season.
Yeah, you got to the end of that game and you were just like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what they do now. And it was this really impressive win that felt like the expectation for this team now is watching the game with Wojo, because he was hosting the birthday party today as the godfather of little William. And we got to the end of the game and he was like, oh, just a rudimentary Lions win. And it really was the right word in that moment, because they took the lead in the first quarter and they just sort of breezed through the rest of the game. And to your point, they never have to deviate from their game plan. They did exactly as they wanted to from the beginning to the end. They came out and they set the tone as they like to with David Montgomery, who was peeling off 4 yards, 5 yards, almost every time he touched the ball on that drive. And then when they get down there and they're within 5 yards of the end zone facing a fourth down, well, here comes Dan Campbell doing what he does, trusting his offense. And they force the Packers into the mistake on defense to move the ball 2.5 yards closer. And then here comes Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown doing what they do, because these days, anytime Jared Goff throws to St. Brown, it's just a guaranteed catch, 30 of his last 30 throwing to St. Brown. And I thought that touchdown pass was a perfect illustration of why that connection is so reliable. That was a timing throw where when Goff releases the ball, he's staring at St. Brown's back, but he knows exactly where he is throwing that ball to, and St. Brown knows exactly where he has to be and when to turn to receive that pass. And as soon as he turns around, even though he wasn't really even open, the ball is right there on his back shoulder. He's got the strong hands to make the catch in the elements, to your point. And even though the cornerback Nixon wasn't really beat,
I thought he played it very well.
He played it really well, but St. Brown and Goff have such elite timing that Goff throws him open and St. Brown works himself open at the very last second. And then they're up 7-3 and they're off and running.
Yeah, you know, we talked to St. Brown, as you might expect, in the locker room, and he said, you know, they ran that play for the first time, that route, 2 years ago in training camp. And they ran it a bunch, obviously, this week, but they hadn't really used it in a while, and it was a really good separation generator because it's such a unique route. I heard Brady said on the broadcast he'd never seen the route before, which says a lot, right? Like, if Tom Brady hasn't seen it, it says a lot. Mm-hmm. And Nixon, as you know, I said, played it extraordinarily well, and it's fourth down. You don't have a choice but to throw it. You know, yeah. I think it was really early when Goff got here, he threw it away on fourth down a couple times, and that was a big deal. Like, you know, he has advanced so much mentally as he has physically in this game, and knew he had to make the throw regardless, put it in a great spot. And look, this was another game where Goff hardly stacked stuffed the stat sheet, you know, but look at the efficiency again, 18 of 22, 145. Sorry, he didn't have 140 passer rating, but 110. And, you know, I would say, you know, as you're kind of like still not used to some of this stuff, coming to this game, he was a concern for me. The elements of all the players on the roster, he was one I was most concerned of. He'd been, you know, struggling with some ball security in the pocket. He has, for what, you know, it's not his fault, but he has smaller than average hands. That comes into play when the ball is wet and it's cold and all that. So you wonder how he's going to respond. And he did. I mean, he responded in a huge way. He's responded in a huge way all season. And, you know, these aren't the numbers that get you, you know, MVP consideration. But when you look under the hood, like, they should.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing the little things right. He's avoiding the mistakes. And when, you know, Dan Campbell talked about it coming down to a critical error at the end of the game, well, it turns out it came at the end of the half. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when the critical error was. Yeah. That play, it didn't end the game. I mean, 14 points is not ending the game, but it gave you a 14-point lead with getting the ball back, and it was Jordan Love in his house, in his elements, making the mistake, not Jared Goff. And I don't know if we could have said that 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
More of the Detroit Football Network podcast is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and it was the Lions Pro Bowl caliber, shoot, all pro caliber safety who made the play of the game, not the all pro caliber safety on the other side who just won NFC Defensive Player of the Month and Xavier McKinney. And Kirby Joseph just has such a nose for the football. And sure, is it an ill-advised throw by Jordan Love? Yes, but not many safeties have the wherewithal and the awareness and the hands to come down with that ball in the rain and then immediately race off for a touchdown. Kirby Joseph just has a way about him being in the right spot, and that's a talent. I mean, it sounds, when you say it like that, oh, he's in the right spot at the right time, you can make it sound serendipitous or spontaneous, but like that is a quality in his game that they have always really liked. He knows where he needs to be on the field. He knows where he is relative to others on the field, and he knows almost always where the ball is going. And again, he was right in that spot. And also credit to Anzalone, who I think came like on a late blitz, and he was the one who ultimately got to Love on that throw and forced him into that pass. And there's Joseph, and it's just another example of Aaron Glenn and this defense working as a unit. I mean, they held up long enough in the secondary as Love is scrambling. Anzalone comes in late, gets the pressure as Love is falling because Anzalone has his hands on him. Kirby's there, makes the catch, and he's in the end zone. And it did kind of feel like at that point that the Lions would barring disaster, were going to win that game. And sure enough, they did. Kirby Joseph, 6 interceptions, 14 now since he entered the NFL. That's a staggering number over the course of 2.5 seasons, 14 interceptions. I mean, that's not normal production for any player at any position on defense. He is an all-pro level safety right now.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there might be two of them on this roster, and we'll get to the other one in a minute here. But what I liked about this Joseph interception is it was so different than the other ones. He wasn't just playing center field. He wasn't showing range. He was coming on the blitz, and in some ways it was a happy accident. I mean, he was trying to come through and create the pressure and get the sack, and Josh Jacobs picks him up on the blitz and hits him pretty hard. And that collision is kind of what put them in the sphere of the same area to make the play. But I just don't know if I've seen a safety with Kirby Joseph's hands. I mean, they really are remarkable. And I understand he was a high school receiver. He was a receiver when he started at Illinois, which we almost forget because he's become so good at safety. And Dan Gimbel's talked about that. We drafted him. We knew he was raw, but we just absolutely loved the instincts. And, you know, I think back to Glover Quinn, because Glover Quinn was that cerebral type safety here, but it was different. Like when you talk to Quinn, he was so good at conveying kind of his mental process and the amount of film work he put into figuring out tendencies and stuff. It almost feels like Joseph's instincts are more inherent, like natural. And obviously the range is superb to capitalize on that, but you look at that one at Tennessee last week. I mean, just the amount of ground he covered to make that pick, which is more of a traditional one for him, but still, like, you can't take any of that for granted. And then this one, I mean, it's tough to make that interception leaping in traffic, and
the ball was on quick. Like he had to react very smoothly, and he did.
And he said he saw it in slow motion, which I totally believe him, because that's just who he is. And then he gets to the end zone, and he hasn't been there since high school. You know, he hasn't scored a touchdown since he was in high school. He never had a pick six, never had a reception for a touchdown at Illinois. And you could tell when he gets to the back of the end zone, he turns around, and it was like this oh crap moment. Like, he didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And for a guy that has all these coordinated goofy celebrations, yeah, like he was just stunned. And, you know, his teammates swarmed him pretty quickly. And, you know, I asked him about it. And he just said he was just so overwhelmed in the moment with the emotions of it all. I mean, he grew up a Packers fan, right? Like, and he said these did not trump the Aaron Rodgers interceptions, by the way, just so we're clear. Those are the ones he's still going to sleep with. But really cool moment for him. But I did bring it up. Brian Branch got ejected in this game.
Yeah.
Big hit for his defensive MVP award that you've already handled him. look, I think this is going to be a controversial opinion with Lions fans. I understood the call. You know, after seeing it in slow motion, seeing how he led with his head, I think everybody will agree that it was a penalty, or most everybody will agree it's a penalty by the NFL standards. But, you know, I did understand the ejection decision when and their logic with it, saying that he had a time and a decision to make to do something else. I don't think it was as bang bang as some Lions fans do. And look, the most important thing is like he's got to protect himself. I mean, it's not just the penalties. He knocked himself out in the Arizona game, and that's not me guessing. That is something I was told by multiple people in that locker room. Knocked himself out. Like, you don't want any player lowering their head, jeopardizing themselves, jeopardizing the other team. And you don't want anybody getting injured in this game. Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's going to be a point of emphasis for the coaches, for him to get that element out of his game. You can hit hard in this league still and keep your head up. And that's signs have been in the locker room since I've got on the beat. I mean, it's always been a point of emphasis in this league, but now more than ever, and maybe a suspension or not a suspension, an ejection, and probably a very, very hefty fine that's going to come with it is going to be the impetus to get him right in that regard.
Yeah, I just don't like judging a player's intentions or actions by the standard of slow motion.
Yeah.
In slow motion replay, almost everything looks intentional and often malicious, and you can always assume or that a player has more time to decide whether or not he should pull up or he should, you know, when you slow things down frame by frame, it looks rather simple. Of course, Branch, if he had that much time in reality, would have picked his head up and avoided the helmet to helmet contact, but that's not how the game is played. And I think it's an oversimplification for the review team in New York to break that thing down frame by frame in slow motion and put themselves in Branch's shoes. I mean, that's essentially what they're doing. They're saying, well, we think based on this view that you had enough time to decide to avoid that contact, but you're not playing. Like, you aren't in his headspace as he has, what, maybe a second and a half max to decide whether or not he wants to follow through on that hit. I just think it's a dangerous standard to like adjudicate that play by. And in my opinion, they went a step too far with the ejection, but I understand your point of view as well.
Well, good. I think that's where we're at. I mean, it was close.
Yeah.
You know, I think the NFL at this stage tends to err on the side of player safety, and you know, sometimes that sucks, and it sucked today. And if the Lions had lost this game, it would have sucked a whole lot more. But I think it actually, you know, further validated this team that without Branch, mm-hmm. they still, you know, were able to kind of cruise to a win. And look, I think they wanted to pull away. I think they would have been happy to embarrass Xavier McKinney and made him even more angry after his comments last week. They did. They tried that reverse to Khalif, and good job on the Packers snuffing it out. You know, look, they had a little bit of offensive lull in that second half, and the conditions, you know, at some level were going to trip them up. They weren't going to get, you know, 40 points in this game, but the defense did a really remarkable job, particularly with the way the Packers started. They bent, didn't break. Again, they got bailed out by the Packers a few times today, but that's not your fault. If your opponent wants to bail you out, you got to take advantage of it. God knows the Lions have bailed out countless opponents over the decades. Yeah. And so it was nice to be on the other side of the equation tonight, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, now the march is on. for real, given the last couple opponents that they've handled, last three opponents they've handled, like this is a team that has its eyes on the number one seed in the NFC, and I mean it's looking as realistic as ever after today.
Yeah, I mean this team is so intentional about the way it approaches each game. Like they take the game plan so seriously, and a huge part of it this week was, don't make the critical error, because mm-hmm. the Packers were 6-2 entering this game in large part because other teams made those mistakes. I mean, look, 19 takeaways is extremely impressive, but that also requires 19 mistakes on the behalf of other teams. And the Lions, I think, had the third fewest turnovers entering this game, and they played that way. And they waited for the Packers to make the mistake, and they capitalized on their chance when it was presented to them, and they just refused to give the Packers a chance to take the ball away. I think as close as they may have ever come was when basically Sewell was tripped by Kevin Zeitler and Rashawn Gary got home for the sack, but Goff was secure with the ball and went down to the ground and obviously didn't fumble. And besides that, Jared never gave McKinney or anyone else a chance to make a real play on the ball. He took what was given to him, and the running backs were as secure with the ball as ever. And the Packers never had a chance to show that opportunistic defense that has propelled them through eight games. And that was a huge point for the team going into it, and they executed it. And I also wanted to say on the on Gibbs's touchdown run on fourth down.
Yeah, Sewell made up for his.
Just insane, that block by Sewell. I mean, he completely erased Preston Smith, who is not an easy player to eliminate like that.
Will, and you're underselling it. He eliminated the entire side of the formation. Yeah. I mean, it was it's funny. I asked Gibbs about it in the locker room, and he's like, you know, I've been around that dude for a year and a half now. Like, honestly, I just expect it.
Yeah,
and it's so crazy. Like, these guys are like, he blocked like four guys. But I mean, that's Panay. You know, whatever.
That's what he does. Yeah, but you know what? Also on that play, Laporta sealed off, I think it was Quay Walker. And that's mm-hmm. the second week in a row where Laporta has laid a really important block on a Gibbs touchdown run. And I was thinking back to training camp today and over the course of last week, at how Laporta had pointed to two areas where he really wanted to improve this year. And one was, I think, just like coming out of his routes a little bit cleaner. And the other one was blocking. He said he really wanted to make an emphasis on his run blocking in particular. He said, I'm trying to throw my hands and play a little bit lower in the run game. And 2 weeks in a row now, we've seen him do that. And he is as big a reason as really any that they've had such explosive runs. Obviously the offensive line and the running backs get a whole ton of credit, but Laporta is involved in that as well. And while the statistical production might be down, he's still bringing value to this team week in and week out. And then the last element of that play that I think was worth highlighting is that it seemed like kind of a cursory play or a cursory element of the play, but Jared did throw a little pass fake in there, and it froze McKinney just long enough to where that hole that Sewell had created was open long enough for Gibbs to run through it into the end zone. So there's so many aspects of each play, and the Lions are so detail-oriented that they execute each one like it matters, like the play depends on it. And who knows, maybe if Laporta doesn't pick up Walker after Sewell erases the rest of the defense, Walker makes a play. Maybe if Goff doesn't really sell that fake, McKinney doesn't bite on it, and he's there to at least take Gibbs down for maybe only a 4 to 5 yard gain. Like, Ben Johnson talks so much about the details, and this offense executes them so precisely every chance they get. I thought that play, it really stood out.
The Detroit Football Network podcast continues after this.
You know, I think we're probably long past the time where we need to be throwing out comparisons between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford. They're different players. They do things differently. But one thing I've appreciated about Goff since he's been here, I never thought Matthew Stafford was very good at executing play action, play fakes. Mm-hmm. It always felt like, and maybe it was his coaching, right, an attention to detail thing. But I always thought it was a big part of what held the Lions' run game back was that Stafford's play fakes kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched what he's doing in Los Angeles. Maybe they're better now, but Goff runs play fakes, both faking the handoff and or selling a pass after he's handed it off. You know, I think that's how Montgomery's touchdown came today as well, was a little fake quick out built into that. Like, does it as well as anybody. And, you know, it shows up in his play action numbers, which are just, they're just absurd. I mean, they're an absolute integral. It's an integral part, the play action, to what they do offensively. And it's almost the majority of what they do offensively now. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, it's, he does it so well. Why wouldn't you lean into it? I do want to close out with, you know, maybe an area of concern, and it's the same that it's been. No sacks.
Yeah.
Two QB hits with a quarterback that was clearly hobbled. I mean, he had a little bit of in the phone booth agility today, but you know, not the ability to really escape as he normally would. On top of that, third straight week, the run defense has been shaky.
Yeah.
138 yards. I thought Jacobs really ran well much of the game. They averaged 6 yards a carry. Yeah. A lot of it boils down to, well, they're missing so many bodies, right? No Malcolm Rodriguez, no Josh Pascal, no Mekhi Wingo. Just so they were leaning on a lot of guys extra, some practice squad guys. That showed up, but they still need an edge. And while you were celebrating birthdays, there was a report out there from Pro Football Talk. I made efforts to verify it. I wasn't able to, but their report is that the Za'Darius Smith deal is essentially done. Could get done as soon as tonight, maybe tomorrow morning, but it's going to happen before the deadline. Again, I cannot verify that, but I think we've said it multiple times here. Of the realistic options, Za'Darius Smith stood out as kind of one of the better fits. I talked to Isaiah Thomas in the locker room a little bit about him after the game, just because they were teammates for a couple of years in Cleveland. Yeah. Spoke very highly of locker room presence, leadership. I think production is there. Yeah, he's the number two to Myles Garrett. Maybe you're not going to get that level of production, but it certainly is an upgrade, a step in the right direction for a team that really, really needs some depth and some talent on the edge as they, you know, roll towards this Super Bowl run if they're going to make one.
Yeah. I mean, look, he had five sacks in eight games entering today. So he's on pace for a double digit sack season. That's about as,
I think that would be his fourth too. So, I mean, it's like there's a history of production.
Yeah. He's got a very strong resume, three-time Pro Bowler. And that's about as good as you're going to find when it comes to realistic trade targets. And I think he was one that obviously a lot of people zeroed in on as soon as this need became evident. And sounds like Brad Holmes is pretty close to getting the job done. I truly believe, I'm not just trying to sound different when I say this, but I truly believe that it is as important what Za'Darius Smith does for this run defense as it is what he does for the pass rush, because the foundation of this defense for the past year and a half has been its ability to snuff out the run. And as you said, for the past few weeks, really since Hutchinson went down, they have been a much more vulnerable unit on the ground, especially on the edges. And if they can't find a way to put a lid on that, there will come a time when they won't have the ability or the opportunities to rush the passer. Like, it won't really even matter. And they're going to end up facing better and better offensive lines and better rushing attacks the deeper they want to go into the playoffs. And they have to be able to stop the run the way that they were with Hutchinson. And hopefully Za'Darius Smith makes an impact in that regard on top of the obvious pass rushing skills.
Yeah, look, the schedule does lighten up a little bit, but it's not going to happen until after next week. And next week's going to be a really, really stiff challenge from the fact that you've got an efficient quarterback. As you know, the receiving core in Houston's a little banged up right now, but Joe Mixon is running very well. That's been a really good acquisition for him. And it's a primetime game, so you know you're going to get an elevated level of competition once again. And, you know, just thinking about it on paper, right? The DJ Reader, Liam McNeil in the center, you throw Levi and Za'Darius Smith on the edges, and then you maybe even throw a fifth down lineman, which the Lions have used plenty of, whether that's Trevor Nowoski or whatever is the hang off defender there. It just looks a lot better than what they have now. And so, I don't know if Za'Darius Smith's all they need, but it certainly is going to be a step in the right direction of solving the biggest hole on the roster by a significant margin.
Yeah. Well, and he gets his wish because he made it pretty clear like 2 weeks ago.
Pretty great.
He quote would love to play for the Lions.
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
It was just incredible. Just openly talking about the idea of playing for another team. And here he is headed to that team. I don't know, 3 weeks later, he said he was looking forward to getting a chance to play against the two teams that he used to play for in the NFC North, the Vikings and the Packers. So he'll get a shot at those guys down the line too. But this is a necessary move. We've seen other contenders make moves to address their needs, whether it was the Chiefs bringing in DeAndre Hopkins or the Vikings bringing in Darisaw. And this is a signal from Brad Holmes and their front office that this is clearly a team that expects to win the Super Bowl. And this sort of move just confirms their intentions, their aspirations.
Yeah, and look, I recognize Za'Darius Smith is 32 years old. He's much closer to the end of his career than the beginning. But outside of the 2021 season, where I'm going off memory here, but I believe he had a neck injury that sidelined him the whole year. He has played at least 16 games. Five of the other five seasons outside of that one in 2021. So you're getting durability. He started all eight for the Browns this year and played a pretty heavy snap load. And he's under contract for a relatively reasonable cap hit, given the position, given the production. And I think it's something like 11 mil, and it's actually divided over 2025 and 2026, just with some of the void year structure. Well, that is mumbo jumbo for most people. But Marcus Davenport's an expired contract. Marcus Davenport, as much as he was a fit, is a durability risk at this point.
Yeah.
And this fills that hole, not just for this year, but for next. Maybe add another piece in the draft and get the heir apparent there in the first or second round or whatever. But it's a multi-year solution, and I think that just makes the acquisition just that much better.
Yeah, and ideally it reduces the need for Aaron Glenn and this defense to blitz the way they have. I mean, that's basically how they've stayed afloat in some ways since losing Hutch, but they can go back to relying on getting a rush with four, and with the way that this secondary is playing, that makes this defense all the more lethal. I mean, if you can drop that many into coverage and basically dare quarterbacks to find an open receiver, that's how you end up with Branch and Joseph combining for, what is it now, 10, 11 interceptions through the first nine games of the season. I mean, that's it really does start up front. And if you can get home with four more consistently than they have for the past two or three games, it just allows the talent in the secondary to really shine.
Yeah, it makes the blitzes more impactful as well. I'm going to close with another controversial opinion, Will. I kind of like these Packers uniforms.
Yeah.
I thought they were pretty – I like simple, and it worked.
Do they pop in person?
Yeah. Nolan Bianchi over at Detroit News was disappointed, though, as a first-time Lambeau viewer. He felt that the Packers disrespect his experience by not giving him tradition. So I understand. Obviously, they did not consult. Yeah. Nolan, that's disappointing. All right, you got anything else? We're gonna kick out here because I know you're spent.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you are too. No, I mean, I'll just reiterate what I said at the top. You know, you get to the end of these games now, and you shrug your shoulders and say, "All right, who's next?" They're
so
on
weird.
Such an incredible role, and they're just so well oiled that it feels like a machine. And you know, you remind yourself to be impressed because it's hard to, the way they're making this seem so run of the mill every Sunday.
Yeah, I know we both picked the Packers with the points. I think we both thought the Lions would win a really tight one here, but I mean, really, we are picking the Lions every week. And, you know, historically, I could go back years and making predictions for different publications I work for. That has not been the case. It is not a homer attitude, but it's legitimate Like, you feel every time you watch this team, you expect them to win. And, you know, maybe they'll have some trouble with Buffalo down the road. Maybe they'll have problems with Houston. Maybe San Francisco, when they're healthier at the end of the season, will give them some trouble. But this is an elite football team that is going to be the king of the mountain that everybody's trying to knock off. And I'm getting to the point where I'm used to it, and it took a couple years, but I'm there. This episode, as always, produced by Zach Clark. We didn't do the commercial breaks. We're going to force him to put them in today because
thank you, Zach.
Yeah, so we appreciate that. Podcast available wherever you can get it. You know, obviously start with the Odyssey app, but Apple, Spotify. We're working on the YouTube music thing. I don't know what's going on with that, but we'll figure it out. Download, like, all the good stuff. Rate. Will is sustained by your stars. And I think we're still rolling with a perfect rating, which completely just jinxed it.
Love to see it.
Jinxed it. For Will Birchfield, I'm Justin Rogers. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.